This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Not every day we see this type of opportunity, and we wanted to make sure to secure it. Any questions on the Boy Scout of America adjacent to the Newton Hill State Park acquisition?
What is the avenue to access those Forest Legacy funds?
Great question, and we have done this only one other time to my recollection with Good Earth State Park. We use some of those Forest Legacy funds over there. We have to work through, we have a state representative, works for Department of Ag, so we're working with those folks. And right now, one of the entities that is most familiar with this process is the Conservation Fund. I can let Scott Simpson elaborate on that. He's been in contact with those folks a little bit more than I have. So, Scott, anything to add to that, sir?
Fisher Bees, I don't know, maybe what is your question on how do you get to those funds or where do they come from?
Take to obtain.
Okay. It's a pool of money that's out there that basically you write a grant for. And your grant needs to meet certain criteria in order to qualify for the funding. Most of the Forest Legacy funds that I've seen are to maintain a critical piece of habitat or unique landscape from being developed. That's a big portion of it. It relates back to forested areas. So obviously we're looking at something that's got, I think it's got to be at least 75% trees, maybe even more than that. So there's a couple of criteria that are there. Basically you apply for it. It goes into a national competition, so to speak, where it's put up against other projects. And then however you score out, that will qualify you for these funds. It's really competitive, but as we've worked with the Conservation Fund, they've had really good success with acquiring these funds. And they basically, not only would they purchase this land and hold it until those Forest Legacy funds came to fruition, but they would also write the grant for us, and they do it all the time. So feels like we feel like it gives us the best opportunity to make sure that we're successful in getting those funds and ultimately paying for roughly 75% of the purchase.
One thing to add here is because of the close proximity to Sioux Falls, this is a high destination area for archery deer hunters in particular. You know, we have access permits, and there's upwards of 100 plus access permits in this area alone that are hunting Newton Hill State Park. And then the Johnson GPA, you don't need an access permit for, but this will just add to that opportunity for archery deer hunting. This area here holds quite high deer densities because of it's a habitat it's providing. So this is a great opportunity for hunters and also our park users. The trails and things we can develop inside of this area here will be beneficial to both uses. So any other questions on the property itself? For the timeline, right now the letter of intent is dated November 30th to close for this property. So that's when they stated on the letter of intent to close, and then we'll work out the details in the actual contract. So in the purchase agreement.
Kevin, for big game, is it archery only, or is the muzzleloader allowed for some species there as well?
I believe in Newton Hills, it is just archery only and shotgun only. So in that case, slug muzzleloaders would not be allowed. I'd have to turn to Scott for that as well. Newton Hills State Park.
Just archery.
Archery, yes.
And shotgun.
And shotgun, yes. On that Johnson GPA, however, to the north, that's rifle and everything else is allowed there. And the McKee GPA.
All of which have to have access permits in order to tap into those, or no?
Not for the game production areas, no. Nope.
Okay.
And this parcel, this 223 acres, we suspect about 160 will become GPA, and about 60, so a little over 65, will become part of Newton Hill State Park. And those details will be figured out as we move forward with the purchase, so don't quote me exactly on those acreage estimates. It'll be a great addition for opportunity down there in an area that there isn't a lot of public land. I mean, around Sioux Falls, this area gets heavy use and an exciting addition.
Thanks for the update. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chairman Olson.
Moving on, if no other questions. We're going to number five. Lisa, is she with us in person or online?
I'm online.
Welcome, Lisa. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We get number five and number six out of you today. So that's...
We'll just do them right back and back. So good afternoon, Chairman Olson, members of the commission, and Secretary Roebling, if I have to remind you. My name is Lisa Weyer. I'm the Executive Director for the South Dakota Parks and Wildlife Foundation and the Second Century Habitat Fund. I want to thank you for giving me a little bit of time today on the agenda to just provide some updates to you as to the work that the two nonprofit organizations that give support to Game Fish and Parks, just to let you know what we're doing. So for the Parks and Wildlife Foundation, we have secured $320,000 for the Custer State Park Bison Center. We're in contact with donors to achieve our goal of the $500,000 in private funds, and I think we are getting close to that. We recently approved $175,000 to go to the Adams Nature Preserve for their upcoming construction project enhancement. And then the foundation closed on the Rapid City Shooting Range property on March 25th. So we have that in place for the department to take over when they are ready. And just a couple other things, we are searching for a new development director, as Dick Brown, our current development director for many, many years, is retiring as of June 30th. So if anybody has any potential names, please let one of the board members or myself know. And then also the foundation board would like to extend an invitation to all the commissioners to attend our board meeting in May, which will be May 5th from 1 to 4 p.m. Mountain Time at the Creekside Lodge in Custer State Park. And we do this meeting on purpose and holding it in conjunction with the May commission meeting in hopes that we can have some collaboration and networking capabilities. And then I would like to extend the offer to provide a presentation at the May commission meeting that would go into a little bit more in depth as far as what the Parks and Wildlife Foundation has done to summarize our accomplishments and successes that as the partnership between Game Fish and Parks and the foundation, just what we've been successful at. So I would offer that image, or offer that to you guys if you would like for us to take it up. So for Second Century Habitat Fund, I'll just keep on moving to the next item if that's okay.
Okay.
Working Lands Habitat Program, we've been successful at reaching our goal. We've reached that for quite some time. We're at 5,754 acres that are enrolled, planted into habitat grass. And then some of our exciting news is our latest fundraising project, which is the Can-Am Raffle, which I know Nick Harrington went into some details on that at last month's meeting. But just to give you an update on that, we've sold 559 tickets since March 8th, so a total of $55,900 for the fundraising effort. So those are my updates. I'm happy to answer any questions, and again, want to thank you for the time today.
Anybody have any questions for Lisa?
No, good presentation, Lisa, and I think that'd be wonderful if you could give us a good 15-minute, 20-minute presentation at the May meeting to kind of go back over the history of the foundation and the successes that it has shared with the GFP over the years.
Absolutely, would love to, Mr. Sharp.
Thanks, we'll look forward to seeing you in May then.
Thank you.
Very well. I think we'll move on to number seven, the Nest Predator Bounty Program. I think, Keith, are you going to do this one?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. I don't know about the people here.
Very good. Keith Fisk, I'm a program administrator with Game Fish and Parks here at Pier and going to give the commission just a real brief update on the Nest Predator Bounty Program. So good afternoon, members of the commission and Secretary Roebling. As you know, at the last meeting, you folks authorized the 2021 Nest Predator Bounty Program, which started here on April 1st. We held our first check-in days at Game Fish and Parks offices across the state here on, it would have been April 6th, so the day after Easter Monday. We had approximately 80 participants submit tails during that check-in time for a grand total of just under 1,000 tails here the first part of the for the first check-in. And we had 30 of those 80 participants were 17 years of age and younger, so good participation from the youth there. And as part of an incentive to get youth involved in this program, we also held our first weekly giveaway here yesterday, and we had a young gentleman from Frankfort, South Dakota, Tyler Esser, was the winner of our prize package, which again is three Game Fish and Parks live traps, a knife, and then a North American trapping educational booklet that'll be mailed to Tyler there. So again, trying to get a lot of folks interested in this program. We're anticipating some pretty good participation coming up here with the nice warm weather that we see on the forecast. And again, I just wanted to highlight for folks listening that those tail turn-in days are Tuesdays at Game Fish and Parks offices across the state from noon to 6 o'clock. And then, of course, people can access our website there and look at the dates and the times of some additional locations. And, of course, we also want to provide excellent customer service. So if we have some folks that can't make it to a GFP office for one reason or another, they can reach out to their local wildlife conservation officer or wildlife damage specialist and find out a time that they can both hook up and make those transactions happy. So again, off to a good start here and looking forward to the next several months of this program rolling out. So that's all I have and would be happy to answer any questions.
Anyone have any questions for Keith? Certainly appreciate the update, Keith. Maybe I missed it, but are we still suggesting to people that are participating in the program that they freeze the tails, or is that no longer a necessary component post-COVID shutdown?
Yeah, Commissioner Chair, we certainly do ask people to freeze those tails. It's probably not so important right now at this time of the year when we still have cooler temperatures, but as the season progresses and it gets warmer, it's just nicer for everybody that's involved if those tails are frozen. So, you know, what we tell people is throw them in a Ziploc bag, throw them in your freezer, and then take them out on the day that you go to an office, and it works well for everyone.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that. Any other questions for Keith on the Nest Predator Bounty Program before we move on? Thanks, Keith. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Tom, are we going to hold off on number 8? Until 1:45.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if that would be okay with you, Mr. Baumgartner is not on the line just yet, but if you'd like, we could continue on down the agenda if that would work for you until that 1:45 mark.
It works for me. We'll go on to number 9, youth proposal. John, are you on deck for this one?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
We can't hear you now, bud. Online, anyway. Can Chris Hull come to the rescue?
All right, how about now, Mr. Chair?
I can hear you perfect. Thank you.
All right, perfect. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Commission members, Secretary Roebling, Jack Tillich, staff attorney. Turn your eyes to page 82 of your packet that Rachel provided. It is called the Youth Package Proposal. And this stems from legislation that was introduced the last legislative session, 2021, House Bill 1034. In a nutshell, House Bill 1034 really aimed at simplifying our statutes and subsequently our rules and regulations, basically for youth. I mean, before the statute changed, it was a kind of a mix of Some seasons were 16 and under, you were considered youth. Some seasons, if you were under 18, you were considered youth. Some seasons, if you were 19 and under, you were considered youth. So what that piece of legislation really did was just streamline everything. You are under the age of 18, you are considered a youth for all seasons, all licenses. So that was one part of the equation. It dealt with all the statutes that reference youth in. This is the second part of the equation, and this is going back into our administrative rules and aligning that same idea. Again, correcting anywhere where it says 16 to have it being under 18. So I think Tom Kirschman or Director Kirschman just passed out a sheet. This is kind of a breakdown. It's called the license framework. You can see the various different types of licenses we have there. You can see what they used to be and what we're proposing them to become. Some of them, again, were changed in statute. I'll just briefly go through the administrative rules that will need to be updated. There's 8 of them that we've identified that will need to be changed. The first one would be the combination license. Right now, under the combination license, we have a restriction that you have to be older than 16 years of age to purchase the combination license. But as you'll see, that's because we had a junior combination license that was kind of in conjunction with this. And again, that age restriction is not really required anymore. And really, you're not going to see somebody under the age of 18 purchasing a combination license, because in the statute, you change it to fishing is free, or you don't need a license for fishing when you're under 18. The real reason that any youth might need a combination license is for, if you recall, last year we passed, we amended our rules to allow for the unrestricted take on private shooting preserves if a resident held a combination license. So this would allow a youth to participate in unrestricted take on a PSP. Moving on to the next administrative rule, another bullet point on your proposal sheet, you see a couple changes there. Again, that's just identifying where we had kids who were under 16 years of age for resident small game license. That was considered a youth. So we changed that, updated that to 18. Again, we also are removing the resident junior combination license, which is no longer needed. Non-resident small game license, again, we streamline that. As being under the age of 18, you'd be considered youth. Spring snow goose, temporary non-resident license, under the age of 18 is youth. Non-resident youth waterfall season hunting license, under the age of 18. And then the other part that we kind of, and Chad Switch will get into this a little more detail, but this is just kind of the where we set the fees for our license types. Right now we have apprentice and mentored hunting kind of all jammed in together, and within that is also youth. So we're going to carve that out and make 3 distinct seasons: a youth deer season, a mentored season, and an apprentice season. And I'll let Chad go more into detail with that. That's just updating the language there. Moving on to the next rule would be the non-resident waterfall licenses. Again, that was just correcting a cross-reference and more of an administrative correction. Moving on to the next bullet point 4, eligibility requirements and restrictions for youth waterfowl hunting. There we updated, there was, in administrative rule, we have a requirement that the youth have to be accompanied by an adult. That's actually found in statute right now. So if you are under the age of 16, you have to be accompanied by an adult. That's just what the statute is. So we're cleaning up our rules so that we're not repeating what statute already says. Moving on to the next bullet point, same thing there. Again, eliminating the requirement that the parent or guardian has to be with the youth. Again, we're not saying that the parent doesn't have to. We're just saying it's already covered in the statute. Moving on to bullet point 6, this is dealing with the fishing licenses. We're eliminating the non-resident family fishing license, and that's large in part because of the bill that went through in 2021, this last legislative session. Again, non-resident youth and resident youth under the age of 18 are able to fish without a license, so that took care of a big chunk of who would be utilizing those non-resident family fishing licenses. So basically, it came down to becoming a spousal family fishing license. So got rid of that, and then obviously there's no need for a non-resident youth fishing license because it's dealt with in the statute. Moving on to bullet point 7, daily in possession limit for non-resident family fishing license. Again, because we're removing the non-resident family fishing license, the possession limit rule is not needed. And then the last bullet point there, any resident angler under the age of, currently at 16, wouldn't need a fishing license to get a paddlefish permit. We updated that to 18. So that's it in a nutshell, Mr. Chair. I'll be happy to answer any questions. I know I ran through that and rattled off some numbers rather quickly. I think the biggest takeaway is, again, simplification of our rules stemming from House Bill 1034, just making it consistent that if you are under the age of 18, you are a youth across the board. So again, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Anyone have any questions for John on this? I think, again, John, you did go through it fast, but, you know, there's archived data from lots of different testimony on both sides of the chamber on this, and if people really want to get into the brass tacks of the detail, they could certainly find that easy enough as well. But you did a great job summarizing how we got to where we're at, and I think it totally makes sense and I'm supportive.
So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd entertain a motion as well.
Move to approve.
Motion.
Second.
Second by John. Any discussion on the motion? None. Seeing all in favor, indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks, John. And we're going to move on to number 10, disabled pheasant hunts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. Mr. Chair, I don't know if you can just see the back of my balding head or if you can see me, but you're stuck with what you get.
Well, it's all about perspective, and it looks like a full head of hair coming from where I sit.
Okay, that's good. On page 84, Mr. Chair, would be the special pheasant hunt for disabled veterans. What we have in front of you here this afternoon is simply a rule cleanup to reflect some legislation that came out of the 2020 legislative session and was signed off by Governor Noem, which essentially expanded this special pheasant hunt opportunities for disabled veterans to also include Purple Heart recipients. And another portion of this bill expanded the time that these users could participate within this season, extending it from September 1 through the end of the season. So simple rule change to address what is reflected and authorized within statute. And with that, that's all we have for you on this one. So I'll try to answer any questions if you have any. If not, I'd ask for a motion, please. Move to approve.
Bit of motion.
Moved by Bees, Sharp by Sharp will second.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Thanks, Chad. Non-resident landowner own land.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is Tom Kirschman, Director of the Wildlife Division, and Commission members. So, the non-resident landowner owned land is going to be the topic related to that particular item will be addressed in a subsequent or a little bit later action sheet. So if you don't mind, we'll just skip past that one and go on to number 12, and we'll come back and address non-resident landowner owned land with some other items related to the chapter that deals with application for licenses, and we'll do it all at one time.
That's fine. I think people would rather hear about public water zoning.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chair. John Contelnik, staff attorney. I don't know that you, this isn't really as exciting as non-resident landowner owned land, but if you turn your attention to page 86 in your packets, this is really a cleanup of a cleanup. So again, if the commission remembers last year, starting in 2019, myself and Andy Albin painstakingly went through every single page of our administrative rules, looking for ways to trim down some excess fat and reorganize some things to make it more coherent and just really simplify the rules. And one of those rules was the rule that's in front of you, 4104.02.11, Charles Mix County Public Water Safety Zones. And it may look familiar because the commission just finalized a rule dealing with this rule last month, and this is how it got brought to my attention. Jeff Van Meteren, regional supervisor down in the southeast part of the state, noticed that there was some inconsistencies with the rule, and after looking at it closer, when I went to reorganize the rule, somehow things got duplicated and some things left out. So if you just look at bullet point four, subparagraph four, excuse me, that's a duplicate. So that rule, that subparagraph is actually already in there. Same with subparagraph eight and subparagraph nine. So I would be requesting the commission take action to delete those and insert, if you look at the next section, the proposed rule change, insert subparagraphs 2, 6, in hate, because those are the ones that were inadvertently left out. Again, this was just an oversight on my part, again, dealing with over 1,500 pages of administrative rule. Became daunting after a while. So with that, I'd have to answer any questions and would entertain a motion to move this forward.
Thanks, John. Are there any questions on the presentation? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion.
Sharp would move. Lockton second.
Thank you. We got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thanks so much, John. Tom, are we going on to item number 13 now? Chad's going to come back to that.
We're actually going to go up to number 14 because 13 are all the deer season items that we want to talk about. But before we talk about the action sheets, we're going to have a presentation by Andy Lindblom and Andrew Norton. We'd like to do them all at one time. So with your indulgence, we'll bump up to past the deer seasons, and Chad Switzer will continue on with the action sheets in your booklet.
Great.
Hey, good afternoon again, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. Chad Switzer, Wildlife Program Administrator. On page 136 would be the chapter pertaining towards our pheasant hunting season. We have no recommended changes on your proposal here. And again, this is just a modification to clean up some rules relating towards the extension of the pheasant season that was moved forward by the Commission last year. So simple rule cleanup, so we don't have any changes here for your consideration. So, Mr. Chair, we can just move on to grouse season unless there's questions on that one.
Seeing none, we just please move on.
Okay. Mr. Chair, on page 138, grouse hunting season, we have two proposed changes here that you as a commission body moved forward last month. One is in regards to the season dates at La Creek. They wanted to mirror the season dates we have statewide. And the second modification there, the proposed change was to end the season date, to move that later from where it is currently at the first Sunday of January to end on January 31. This would mirror what we have for the pheasant hunting season. Again, Mr. Chair, we have no recommended changes for you here today.
Very well. Any questions on that? Keep rolling.
Mr. Chair, on page 79, the hunting requirements and prohibited methods chapter. This is the proposal that is out for public comment right now, related towards our rules pertaining towards chronic wasting disease, the transportation and disposal of carcasses. We don't have any changes here for you today on that. I just wanted to inform the commission, Mr. Chair, that after the meeting in March, we did send a letter out and a copy of the proposal to all of our taxidermists, the game processors within the state, to all garbage hauling companies within the state, the permitted landfills, and just this week sent out and notified those that assisted John with us, Commissioner Lockton, on the CWD stakeholders. I wanted to make sure they were informed of these changes for them to provide any comments or thoughts on this. But looking at the public comments, we've only got about four that I've seen, split about 50-50, those in favor, those opposed. So I don't know if we want to have any further discussion here today, Mr. Chair, but we do not bring forward any changes to you today from the proposal.
Thank you. Any other questions for Chad on that?
Chad, could you just, I know this is ground that's been covered, but could you tell us what the difference is in leaving a deer lay in the field, the CWD, and picking it up and taking it in, having it processed, and then either dispose of there or taking it to an approved landfill? Some people are struggling with, if it's a big deal, why not just leave it lay in the field, going into the ground, whether it's there or not. I mean, these conversations come up. So if you could quickly recover the reason for these rules, that'd be helpful. Thank you.
Sure. Through the chair. Commissioner Sharp, great question, and those are good questions by the public. Obviously, a totally acceptable practice would be to debone that animal and leave those carcass remains at the location or site of harvest.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's where that animal was likely going to succumb to death anyway at some point in their life. What we're trying to do is minimize that artificial spread of that CWD prion across the landscape, taking it from the Black Hills maybe up to, Paddington County, where right now we don't believe we have CWD, just trying to minimize that. So say you're a Watertown deer hunter hunting in the Black Hills. There's nothing that would prohibit you from taking that carcass out of Lawrence or Pennington County in the Black Hills and taking it back to Watertown, to your garage to process, your neighbor's garage to process, to your choice of processor anywhere in the state, or to a taxidermist. The only thing that we're asking those hunters to do now to minimize the potential spread of that prion is to dispose of those carcass remains properly in a garbage dumpster, if that's an allowable item, the company that provides you a dumpster, or to one of the 20-some permitted landfills within the state.
Thank you.
Have you had any violations of that this past year?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, the question here from Commissioner Bees was any violations. To my knowledge, I did pose that question to Sam Skillhouse, our wildlife law enforcement chief. He was not aware of any citations that were issued last year, Commissioner Bees. And to be honest, I don't know if we'd have wrote too many tickets last year. It was probably more of if we did encounter a practice that was not in alignment with what we had in rule for the regulation, we would probably try to do some education there at that standpoint, unless it was something that was really far out where maybe a ticket was warranted. But I'm not aware of any. Commissioner Bees.
Any other questions? Let's keep moving along, James.
So that, Mr. Chair, that's all I have now. We'll continue to monitor the public comments coming in on this proposal. It does have a reach out to many deer and elk hunters across the state. So we'll make sure that you're aware of those comments we received, and we'll have those discussions internally to try to address any of those. So
thank you.